The Big Wake Up by Mark Coggins is what you hope every private eye novel will be, says Edgar Award-winning author Megan Abbott. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com. Chapter 12, Handcuff Ballet. Getting free from the plastic cuffs would have been a cinch had I been wearing the knife I usually kept sheathed on my calf. Only problem was I had ditched it earlier when Melina had excused herself to use the bathroom. For one thing, I wasn't planning on a home invasion. And for another, I didn't think it was exactly the sort of thing she'd be expecting me to keep strapped beneath my trousers. In the end, it was Melina who saved the day. She came too while I was foolishly straining against the loop that held my wrists and ankles together. She flipped over on her back, and by going in point on her toes and shoulders, managed to inchworm her way over to where her purse lay by the couch. She rolled onto her side and cozied up to the bag to retrieve something from inside. I heard a snapping noise behind her back, and then her ankles came free from her wrists. She straightened her legs and, incredibly, threaded her arms past her hips and under her feet. Then, using the nail clipper she'd retrieved, she dispatched the cuffs that bound her hands and feet. A moment later, she was stooped over me, snipping away at mine. "Melina," I said, "you're a champ. I'm going to invite you to all my handcuff parties."
"Please do not make jokes, August. I pray there is no next time. I am frightened to death."
"For good reason." I stood and wrapped my arms around her. I held her tight while I told her what had happened after she passed out, omitting Isis' parting threats. I finished with, "I'm sorry I didn't do a better job of protecting you."
"You did the best anyone could. I am sorry I fainted. And more than that, I am sorry for getting you involved in this. That woman is pure maldad, pure evil."
"But what is her connection to your father and brother?" She put her hand to my chest and gently pushed me back. She made a point of seeking my eyes.
"I have no idea. Hand to my heart. Her Spanish has an Argentine accent. That is all I can tell you."
Talking about Isis reminded us that, regardless of their connection, we needed to alert Rivero and Orlando about her involvement. But when Melina called the Fairmont and asked for Rivero's room, she found herself speaking with a stranger. A second call to the hotel operator revealed that both men had checked out with no forwarding address. Melina called their cell phones. Neither answered. She left messages on each warning about Isis. I offered to drive her back to her hotel. She just shook her head and returned to my arms. I took that as a sign I had a night guest, but I wasn't taking any chances this time around. I pulled away from her and went up to the damaged apartment door. I jammed the door into the splintered frame, attached the security chain, and just for good measure, wedged a chair under the wobbly doorknob. Then I went to the bedroom where I took both my handguns out from the lockbox beneath my bed. The Smith & Wesson I put under my pillow. The Glock I put on the nightstand. Melina stood in the doorway, smiling for the first time since she'd freed us from the handcuffs.
"Mr. Reardon, were you expecting me to sleep on the couch?"
"No,
I understand. You are going to sleep on the couch, but I cannot shoot a gun. What is the point of putting them there?"
"They're not for you. I guess I assumed that..."
"That I would sleep with you and all your pistolas in your bed."
"Not to put too fine a point on it, yes." She came towards me.
"Well,"
she said,
"that is different. All the Fairmont leaves by your pillow is a mint."
She reached out to take two handfuls of my shirt and pulled me to her. The preparations I took for repelling invaders didn't seem excessive when I woke to pounding on my castle door the following morning. I de-spooned from Melina, threw on a bathrobe, snatched up both guns, and hurried to the door. "Reardon!" shouted a voice from the hallway that sounded both obnoxious and familiar. "Open up! SFPD!" I risked a glance through the peephole and confirmed my suspicion. Standing with his big schnoz about an inch from the lens was Lieutenant Smiling Jack Kittredge. Kittredge was a showboating bully, and he and I had had several run-ins in the past, most recently over the murder of the city's election director during the last mayoral campaign. Beside him was another obvious cop I didn't recognize. I ditched the guns in the nearby empty spice drawer in the kitchen and hurried back to undo all the security on the door.
"Looks like you had some other visitors who didn't bother to ring the bell," said Kittredge when I pulled it open. "And you blocked the door closed with a chair. Expecting more black cats?"
A fog of his grassy cologne wafted across the doorway, and I fanned it away. "You guys will do.
You need to show more respect for local law enforcement."
He jerked his chin towards the apartment.
"In with you. We have to talk."
"Here's fine. What's the big alarm?" Kittredge leaned into the doorway, crowding me back. He tilted his head towards the other cop, a chubby redhead with a sparse mustache like rust filings.
"Meet Sergeant Dysart. He's with the Coma Police. He came by Bryant Street this morning, looking to do a little interjurisdictional collaboration. I was going to assign one of my men to work with him until I heard the name of the lowlife he wanted to interview. Then I decided I better help him myself."
"I didn't know your sister lived in the city."
"Fuck you, Reardon. That's the kind of thing I used to say in grade school."
"Too bad I didn't know you in your prime."
"Shut the hell up and listen. The point is he wants to talk with you. It seems that a certain cemetery in Coma is missing a certain dead body, one that you expressed a recent interest in."
Dysart made an embarrassed throat-clearing noise.
"The cemetery in question is Cypress Lawn. We got a call from a Mr. Jake Sandell early this morning. He's the director there, and I believe you spoke with him yesterday. He reported the grave for..."
He pulled out a small notebook and flipped it open.
"Maria de Magistris had been disturbed."
"Yeah, disturbed with a backhoe. What do you know about those, Reardon?"
That was a reference to the mayoral election case, where backhoes had figured in a strange way. "I know a lot about them, Kittredge. And I also know who got the current mayor elected. The guy in the terry cloth muumuu you're in the process of harassing. You might want to keep that in mind."
"Anyway,"
said Dysart,
"what Lieutenant Kittredge says is correct. It does appear as if heavy equipment was involved. The grave was completely dug up and the coffin was removed. Mr. Sandell told us that you had been trying to locate the grave for a client, so naturally we thought to speak with you. May I ask if you informed your client that you had located the grave?"
God help Rivero if he'd actually taken the body, but I didn't see any point in protecting him. After my experience with Isis and Maximo, the police would be the least of his worries. "Yes, I did," I said. I also told him, as Sandell had told me, that he would need a court order to have the body exhumed. He seemed perfectly prepared to do that. In the same interview, he informed me that he considered my assignment to be complete.
"I see. And may I ask your client's name and address?"
"Dysart is being way too polite," said Kittredge. "There's no may about this. You will give us his name. Private investigators are not lawyers or newspaper reporters. That information cannot be kept confidential from law enforcement."
I ignored Kittredge and spoke directly to Dysart. "Sure, his name is Ronaldo Rivero. He's from Argentina, and he's staying at the Fairmont in town. Maybe you heard about the recent cable car shootings. His youngest daughter was one of the victims."
"Thank you, Mr. Riordan. I also heard about your involvement. You are to be commended."
"Oh, please," said Kittredge. "It was a publicity stunt to drum up business, and it sounds like it worked."
Dysart looked at Kittredge, and then back at me.
I think that's all I need. Thank you again.
I doubted Kittredge was going to let it go at that, and I was right.
Wait a minute, he said. Where were you last night, Reardon?
I spent most of the evening with a friend.
What's this friend's name?
That's my business. Arrest me and charge me if you don't like it. Are we done? Kittredge plucked at a big splinter in the doorframe.
What about this damage? There's something else going on.
Burglary. I didn't report it because the police never do anything about it. Now, please move out of the way because I'm closing the door. Good luck, Dysart. Next time, I suggest you skip the escort service. Kittredge gave me a look that could have caused cancer in laboratory animals, but he dragged himself out of the doorway. I pushed the door closed and put on the security chain. Melina was sitting up with a sheet wrapped around her when I returned to the bedroom. Well, I said, you better leave another message for your father and brother. I filled her in on the grave robbing at Cypress Lawn, and while she wouldn't have any reason to be concerned about the cops, with Isis in the mix, we both agreed that it wouldn't be a bad idea to move her to another hotel. We hurriedly showered and dressed, and I ran her over to the Fairmont, where we snuck in the back entrance. She packed up her clothes in the suite, left the key on the dresser, and then I lugged her 5 pieces of matching Gucci luggage downstairs to the car. She called to check out on her cell phone while we drove to the new hotel. I picked the equally ritzy palace on New Montgomery because I knew the assistant manager there, and I figured luggage like that would stick out at the Motel 6. Thanks to my connection, we got her checked in under a phony name. We then retired to the famous glass-domed atrium to dine on a $40 selection of cucumber sandwiches and talk about what the heck we were going to do. We did better at polishing off the sandwiches than we did on deciding the next steps. The waiter whisked away the empty sandwich tray, and I looked around for a packet of saltines or a cocktail onion or something more substantial to eat. Melina saw me hunting and passed over a miniature gherkin she'd retained on her bread plate. Thanks ever so much, I said, and vaporized it in 2 chews. I guess fear and lust make me hungry. She had brought her napkin up to dab at her cheek and now grinned beneath it.
The last part, I believe.
I noticed you finished your fair share. But look, Melina, maybe the best thing to do now is wait. We still don't have any idea about what's going on, and I'm leery of blundering around and making things worse.
But I am very worried, August. That woman seems capable of anything.
Then maybe we should go back to the police and lay out the whole story. We don't know your father was actually responsible for digging up the grave, and even if he was, there are worse crimes. Maybe they'll just deport him. Melina shook her head solemnly.
If what Isis said is true, and the woman buried in the grave is not my aunt, then I am sure this has something to do with the Argentine politics. My father would never forgive me if I exposed him or a political ambition of his to U.S. authorities.
All right, but the only thread I have to pull on is Maximo. I still have the plate number from his car. I should be able to track him down through that.
If you would try, I would be very...
My cell phone went off with a loud chime, causing Melina to pause.
Maybe it's my father,
she said after a quick intake of breath. I nodded while I fished out the phone. The call was from a San Francisco number, but again it was not one I recognized. Reardon, I said into the receiver.
Señor, it's Caesar.
I shook my head to signal to Melina that it wasn't Rivero. Hello, Caesar, I said. Listen, I'm a little busy. Can I call you back? I got your message on the estimate, and that was fine.
It's not about the estimate, Señor. It's about something we found in the car when we were stripping it down. Something we found in a hidden compartment.
A hidden compartment?
Yes, welded in the trunk. I think you better come and see.
You have been listening to The Big Wake Up, a book Publishers Weekly described as outstanding in a starred review. Find it in ebook or trade paperback wherever books are sold. In this podcast, it's read by author Mark Coggins. Learn more about Mark and his other novels at markcoggins.com.